Welcome back to this week's episode of Toys on Tap. It's been a long time coming. We get the other side of the online show duo Kajiki Toys. We absolutely had a blast talking through all things, making toys, shows, all that. If you want more Toys on Tap, you can like, follow, rate, review wherever you get podcasts. Subscribe. It'll just go straight to your phone. You'll fall in love with my voice. Absolutely. If you want to support the show, you can jump on all socials at Toys on Tap. Give us a follow. See some content about the artist. It's amazing. And if you want to support the show even more, you can jump on the Patreon, patreon.com/toysontap. Super easy, low stakes. You can support for as little as a dollar. And we would absolutely adore you and love every bit of that. Now let's get to this week's episode of Toys on Tap.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right, there we go. I think we're back now.
Did you actually hang up or something?
Yeah, I hit the power button and hung up.
Yeah. Dude, I'm pumped that you're on. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah. What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Good, good. This is a good way to start my morning.
Yeah, right? A little top of the morning interview.
Yeah, you know, I had another artist that was like, yeah, I just can't come on. And we had just talked about getting you on. So I was like, yeah, I'm going to slide you in, because it was like either slide you in this week or not until March.
Right. Yeah. So good thing it all worked out, and on my day off too. So,
yeah. So I'm pumped. I'm pumped. But just like every Toys on Tap show, before we start, you have to introduce yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do.
What's up, everybody? My name is Kajiki Toys, a.k.a. David, a.k.a. Gringer. Some people call me Cage Key. Some people call me Kajeki. It's Kajiki. toy maker. And now, I guess, toy show promoter as well. So me and old cave dweller just seem to have made a thing out of this toy show business. So.
Tell me about the name. I can't tell you how many different ways I've had people say it. So tell me about this name and where it comes from before we do a deep dive on you.
Yeah, for sure. The name comes from, so me and a group of my buddies in high school, they mostly came up with the name, but I adopted it and co-opted it. It was based off of the video game Kajiki. Well, I actually don't know exactly. First of all, I'll tell you, Kajiki is an anglified pronunciation of the word. I definitely do not believe that is how it is actually pronounced in Japanese. I think it's Kajiki, maybe Kagakai. Okay. But regardless, we came across this video game Kajiki back in the day, and it's like a fighting game beat 'em up early. It used to was an arcade game and then got released on Super Nintendo is when where we first came across it, or maybe Genesis. But it's a pretty terrible game, almost impossible to beat, you know. But it was like one of these things that, you know, we as a group of guys just loved anything that had that kind of like half math kind of thing, you know. Like especially in high school, we just glommed onto it. So then we took that name and we started making these ridiculously silly movies in high school under those names. So we had Kajiki, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4. I think 5 is the last one. Some of them are feature length films that are miserably watchable, but they're fun. They're fun in chunks. To sit down and watch the whole thing is kind of outrageous. And in that, we in putting together one of these show or these movies later on down the line, when I'm finally editing the thing 25 years later, we come up with this idea to throw in like a toy commercial for some of the characters that we have in the show. We did, or the movie, we didn't film particular parts. And so now, when I was trying to edit this movie 25 years later without any of these guys around, we couldn't go back and film them. So it's like, how can we film these parts? Oh, maybe we'll do it with like toys and we'll make it a goofy toy commercial. And so that was like that was like 2000, it was actually 2018, I think, is when I was started to edit the movie. And so came up with this idea and did a little video, toy commercial video. And then from there, I kind of, because at that point in 2018 into 2018, I started to kind of get my feet into like the toy making thing, you know, coming across like even before Craftsman videos. I think there's a guy that would do Sculpey clay figures of like Five Nights at Freddy's,
yeah,
and things like that. And then of course, obviously came in through found like Craftsman and all those guys. So I was getting the tinge of like what it would be to like figuring out like, oh, you can actually like make your own toys. So then I had come up with this idea to do figures for the characters in my movie. And that's where Kajiki Toys comes from that lineage of those movies.
Yeah.
Which is a tendril back to us just liking crappy things in our teenage years.
Yeah. It's crazy that you have, I remember filming dumb movies and stuff when I was younger too. And it's like with those giant things with the VHS. It's crazy that you still had them. Do you still have them now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Got all the tapes. And
wild.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't have everything we ever shot, but I've got 90% of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even back so far as still having VHS tapes of the stuff. So, I mean, that was, that's what kind of, that I've always been artistic, and then went into school. I actually went to film school for several years, about 6 years. Did not graduate. Don't work in film. that's not how you actually get a job in film, I found out. You don't go to film school for that. But went to film school because I was pretty intent on being like a director or cinematographer. And so how I got into that was by making these goofy movies with my friends in high school. It all really started because I was sick and kind of homebound for quite some time. And my buddies would come over and hang out with me, but I wasn't able to really get to school. So we were, or even really go anywhere. So we were kind of forced to like have fun around my house that was out in the woods.
Yeah.
And so that's what we started doing, like, oh, we got a video camera, let's do the stupid movies of us, you know, chasing each other around in demon masks in the woods, and you know,
yeah,
just no point to them. And it kind of built and built and built. It just started off with me and one friend, and then more friends saw it, wanted to get involved. So we had by the end we had a crew of like 12 guys that were
unreal.
Yeah. We all get together every Sunday after they all got at church, they'd come over.
Yeah. How do you spend your time outside of church making dumb movies? That's how.
Yeah.
How funny. I mean, you have this artistic fling and all that stuff. Walk me back, because that had to have started when you were a kid. Tell me about growing up, what toys you had, all this stuff.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I'm a kid, child of the 80s. I was born in 79. So I grew up all through the 80s. Came up, obviously, He-Man was huge for me when I was a kid, as you can see reflected in the toys I make now.
Yeah.
I definitely lean heavy on the MOTU stuff, but I like to bounce around a bit. But yeah, I mean, Masters of the Universe, G.I. Joe, the ones I had the most of by far, Masters of the Universe, G.I. Joe, some Star Wars, although I've always disliked the 3.75 Star Wars Kenner format, the like real stiff. That was one of the things. Even as a kid, I was like, I want more dynamic poses or them to be able to do more. So it's funny that like that's such a big thing, because that was always my like. I had them. I love Star Wars. You know, there's certainly several of the, especially the stormtrooper types that I really loved. That, and then some other stuff that, like, I really loved Starcom as a kid, which was a blip, but, like, anything with, like, the little minifigures and vehicles, that was one of the things I really liked about G.I. Joe, was, like, that they had the vehicles, and they had such great vehicles along with it, so I was always drawn to stuff like that, but growing up on all those cartoons and everything, you know, you'd get the rock block of Masters of the Universe, Silverhawks, Thundercats, you know, like every day after school, it's like boom, 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 this whole litany of cartoons that were Mask and, you know, so obviously as a kid, I was trying to get every single one of those types of things. And then I remember as probably 11, 12, was I started getting into comic book collecting. Mm-hmm. And then Wizard Comics, if you're familiar with comic book collecting. And then through Wizard Comics, which is like a collector's kind of monthly collector's like guide, kind of like a Beckett's, but more into like all the stuff that was going on in the comic world. They started having a section of like homemade action figures. Like, oh, here's, you made an action figure of a character from a comic book you like that didn't exist. And I remember as a kid trying this out with my buddy, I can't remember what toy we were going to make. We had G.I. Joes and we like taking them. We had the idea like, oh, we're just going to melt the plastic down. And re-pour the plastic, like make these molds out of tin foil and da 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 da. It did not work.
You can't just
take a lighter to plastic and it melts, and then it, you know, that's not how it works at all. Very dangerous. Lots of noxious fumes we created, but that was my first foray into it, and then nothing happened. Obviously, I never made that toy. But then a little later, I got into Warhammer, so painting the Warhammer miniatures. Actually, won a couple of painting contests in my hometown, which is not that. That's not a great achievement.
But you need a medal. We need to get you a medal.
Yeah, right. I used to have little tiny statues. It was like for the 14 and under, you know, category. Yeah. I think it was like me and one other kid that entered. So competition was not stiff. And then I live in a small country town, so it wasn't like, it's not as grandiose as it sounds. But I got into those figures not even knowing how to play the game, and then actually never really got into playing because none of my friends had money to buy all these, to make these armies for the, you know, so I just had some that I painted and got into that. And then for the longest time, I mean, obviously I always liked toys. That's, you know, child of the 80s. You can't, there's so much nostalgia there. I had collected the Spawn toys when they were first coming out, which then, you know, obviously those aren't worth, even worth the plastic they're printed on. But still have a love for them and everything that those toys did to the toy game. For the longest time, I kind of collected toys passively. Like, I'd pick up something I liked, like, oh, that's a cool looking figure, or like, but what my favorite toy of all time is Battle Cat. I love Battle Cat and Cringer, hence my nickname Cringer, DJ name Cringer. That's my favorite, Man at Arms being my second favorite. If I came across a cool Battle Cat, I'd snatch it up. But, you know, I had very, very small amount of actual collected toys. I've never been a completionist collector or anything like that. So,
yeah,
just kind of had those just around, you know, in my house. I just find a place. Oh, cool. This goes here. Then once I found out about toy making, that's when I actually started collecting more. It started off by me just buying up as many toys as I possibly could for fodder. Mm-hmm. I started buying like huge lots of like, oh, they're half broken. Perfect. I'll take them. And in those lots, you know, I'd find like decent toys that were still intact. I'm like, oh shit, I'll just, you know. So now I've, through that process, then got into buying up stuff that is a little bit more collectible. I still don't pay outrageous prices. Although I did just buy a Scare Glow, but I got a sweetheart deal on it. So I had to do that, an original Scare Glow. So that's probably the most I've ever spent on a collectible toy.
Yeah.
And that's probably the most I ever will.
I mean, I started out, when I started this podcast, it was like, oh, I don't collect. And as you can see behind me, that goes away so quickly. Yeah.
I think once you start appreciating the art of it,
yeah,
you start looking at all these toys differently. And like, yeah, you thought they were cool, but then like, oh, you can go back to like some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I didn't even really have many Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as a kid because I definitely had some, but then I was starting to grow out of that into more like video games and stuff. So I wasn't even like, I didn't have a lot of the later stuff. I never even got into once they started getting crazy with the sports and the, you know, universe, you know, like all the different versions of the turtles. But to go back and look at those sculpts now it's like, whoa, you can really appreciate everything that's gone into it a lot more.
Yeah.
And it's opened my eyes up to things.
I think that's why I love the bootleg Ninja Turtles so much. I have so many of them because it takes away the, like, I don't know, the, like, capitalism part of it, because it's so seedy and bootleggy. Plus there still is a skill set behind it, and so it's just a weird, even the ugly ones, like someone breathed in those fumes in their house somewhere in Mexico. So right? I'm into it. And you do this, and then you get to the artistic part of you is still flowing, and you're like slowly picking up toys whenever you see them, and then we get to film school.
Yeah.
Tell me about film school.
Film school was fun. I had a great time in film school. I loved everything I learned, and I actually still find ways to apply shit I learned in film school to like other areas and avenues of my life. The real reason, like I said, I was mostly like cinematography. I went in wanting to be a director till I figured out the director doesn't do what I thought the director did. Mm. And it's like, oh, I want to be like cinematography, lighting.
Yeah.
Like that was really more my thing. Like making atmosphere, you know what I mean? Like actually running the camera, the framing, the whole thing. So I got into that aspect of it and was, I was doing well in school. The real downside to it is, so I'd gone to school here in West Virginia for a couple of years. They didn't have a film program, that electronics media program, which is because I was already getting into doing like digital design, Photoshop kind of stuff. And so this was a little bit more. It was like Photoshop work, some Illustrator work, and some like video editing lightly. This is what this electronic media umbrella concentration was. And so I did that for a couple of years, knowing full well that I was trying to get into film school, just to get a bit of more of a portfolio together of things. That was in 2001 is when I moved to Chicago, got into film school, Columbia College, up there. And it's definitely a very industry focused. Mm-hmm. They do like music, they do animation, they do a lot of performing arts stuff, film. So they're very industry focused. It's like, here's how we're going to get you a job in this industry. And went to school for, like I said, about 6 years. I was in classes. Plus, so I was going to school full time and I was working full time.
Yeah.
And I wasn't living on campus. So okay. I had moved to Chicago. I was living off campus. And unfortunately, film is such a collaborative act. You know, it's a collaborative art. There's no way you can really make a movie by yourself. You can, but it gets really, you know, it gets a little masturbatory. you have to work with people. And so my setup being that I was pretty much working every moment that I wasn't in school, and then I didn't live on campus, didn't live in the dorms, I was getting kind of left behind a lot on all these, like, everybody else that lived in the dorms together. They're always like working on each other's projects, you know, they're like making a bigger community. And that was something I could never really get to with art, with the film school, because just in my, you know, setup, just of what was going on, I'd take every opportunity that I could to work on films, student films, and I got to do some cool stuff. It was definitely few and far between compared to what everybody else was doing. So I was kind of being surpassed in a sense of just like, oh, they're getting so much more experience than me.
Yeah.
Plus I was also a little bit older at the time, cause I had gone to school for a few years and took a year off and took another year off and then got back when I finally got into film school, once I moved to Chicago. So I was already like, you know, 4 years ahead of it, or older than everybody, which, when you're 18, 19, that's a big difference, you know? So I was hanging in there. I had one teacher and I love him. He was good to me for this. Sometimes I tell this story and people think like, oh, he ruined it for you. No, he set me straight. He saw me like really loving what I'm doing and really wanted to do it. And he like pulled me aside one day after class. And he was like, look, if you want to really do this film thing, this, you know, and you want to live in Chicago, get used to shooting commercials, because that's all we do here. we don't make movies. We don't shoot TV shows outside of, they'll come out here and they'll do some exterior shots in Chicago for B-roll shit, you know, once or twice a year. Maybe there is one movie made here every so often, but
yeah,
you know, the competition's so strong in this town that, you know, and your degree doesn't do anything for what, you know, what I wanted to do, which was, you know, cinematography and film. So he's like, look, it really does come down to who you know, not what you know. Mm-hmm. If you really wanted to be in, work in films, you're gonna have to move to LA and just start working in films. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that was kind of like, you know, it was kind of like the final straw. Cause already at that point, I was racking up so much money in student loan debt. Because film school ain't cheap, you know, yeah. Like all the lab fees for everything, the equipment rental fees for everything was astronomical too. So, and after having now been in school for quite some years and without a degree, and even though I'm going to school full time, well, just because of the way that film school works, you know, you get one class and a lab, and that's almost 8 credit hours between the class and the lab, which is all on one day. So you're not doing 12 credit hours a semester isn't going to like progress you fast towards a degree. Mm-hmm. So I decided to drop out, which was a great decision because, I mean, I don't think that film school would have gotten me that job in film anyways. And other things in my life were taking off. I had started working at a hydroponic gardening supply store, mm-hmm. and actually had started growing cannabis illegally at the time. So that was like a thing for me as well. So that was kind of that introduced me to some new things and gave me a little bit more of a career advancement in that area. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of where I dropped out of school. Didn't mean I necessarily stopped making movies, but I, you know, definitely wasn't trying to work on that degree anymore. And so then from there, it's like, okay, I can do many different things.
Empire Blister. Empire Blisters. Specializing in action figure blisters. 3.7 5-inch or 1/18. 19 different styles. Two sizes of clamshell figure cases. Four different bulk pack options. Quantities of 100 sample packs available. Empire Blisters.
Now functional. Toys on Tap.
That means a 10% off coupon on checkout. Use code Toys on Tap 10. That's TOYSOMTAP 10.
Empire Blisters. Empire Blisters.
Still did some filming. Mostly I was doing filming of like people's performances. I kind of got in with this crazy circus crew when I lived in Chicago. They're all like Burning Man guys. And so they would do all these, you know, acrobatic things and dancing, like flow art, dancing with these crazy toys. Sometimes they're lit on fire. And I was doing a lot of their filming of their promo stuff, but that's more just like a monkey with a camera kind of movie making.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, sculpting shot or, you know, like anything like that, telling a story with just visuals, you know? So I still worked on some stuff, but definitely let that part kind of die away.
Yeah. How did you, I mean, with the reality of having something that you'd spent so much time on and years and, kind of a creative passion that you loved with this stuff. How did we kind of kill that side so that you could like move on to other things? What was that like, that process of like, well, this is it and we're going to cut ties with that and move?
I think, for me, that's kind of a normal thing. Cause before I got into filmmaking, I wanted to be a comic book artist. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of led me into filmmaking when I realized like, oh, comic book art, one, it's not that as glamorous of a lifestyle as one might think. And then two, like film is just kind of like making comic book frames, but with a camera. Mm-hmm. And so like that mentality kind of changed and I stopped wanting to be a comic book artist. And then for a while, I wanted to be a photographer, kind of let that die off. I had a DJ career where I was doing, you know, like music stuff, and I ran a record label for a little while. But then also I've always done a lot of like digital design, album covers, t-shirt covers. You know, I was building websites back then. So I always had some kind of creative outlet. So I don't think it's hard for me to necessarily transition out of it. But it's definitely not something I feel like I'd ever like, oh, I'm done with that, you know, even though I haven't really done anything for a while. There's still this like, I've moved back home now, back to West Virginia. And that was like last year. And me and my buddies still get together and talk about every once in a while, like what are we going to do for the next movie, knowing full well we probably will never make the next movie. But it's like, oh yeah, oh here's what we're going to do. Oh, here's the story now. Oh, this guy, da 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 da. Because we have, you know, at this point we've built the whole, you know, lore of these characters and this bigger story in this world. All the movies are connected through the bad guy character is the main tether to all the stories. So it's always like, oh, well, what's he doing now? You know,
At some point you get from this creative outlet to another and it ends up leading you to toys.
Yeah.
But you already tried to melt plastic and create toys. So you knew what's crazy is though that sounds like we can't do that, that's not far off from how toys are actually made.
It's not. No, I don't think anybody's holding a lighter to a G.I. Joe leg and hoping it drips into a mold. But no, it's really not.
So how did, like, tell me the first moment following all this stuff where you saw toys and wanted to create something.
Okay. I tell you, I was dating a girl and she had a couple of kids, and her one son, he was seven, eight, and was really into like Bendy and the Ink Machine, Five Nights at Freddy's, like all that, you know, especially like 2017, 2018. I was really trying to make, like, really push him to try and be as creative as possible. I've always been a big, I think everybody should have some sort of creative outlet in their life. And you know, he was one of these younger generation kids, obviously, that was like just wanted to play video games all day, you know, or like just watch YouTube videos. He started watching these YouTube videos of this guy that was making these characters out of Sculpey clay, and his name is Jax. And one day I was like, Jax, buddy, like, I saw him watching these and I was like, he shows the whole process and everything. I was like, hey, we could make these, you know, we could probably make, you know, I can get us a bunch of Sculpey, and just trying to get him to do something other than just watch a screen, you know? So I started kind of watching more of these videos just so I could see what they were doing, so I could kind of implement those techniques when we were working on these things, you know, like just having fun in the kitchen table. And so through those, that's when I came across a couple of toy makers making stuff. One of them obviously being Craftsman. That's, you know, he's the gateway for most of us, especially in that era. So that like 2018, 2019, 2020, like you couldn't escape it. If you wanted to know, that was the guy that showed you. And so as we were working on these clay figures of just like Captain Underpants, all these, you know, goofy kids things, I started digging up more and more stuff. And then I was like, oh, you could make your own toys, you know, and then found out about resin and a silicone mold and all that. And then, you know, slowly started picking things up. Obviously, there's a lot of gear to acquire. There's a lot of pieces and parts, and you know, the whole collection takes years to put together, really. And kind of just messing around, making a mold, doing some resin casting. It took me years to actually put out my first figure from when I first started kind of messing around with stuff.
What was that first figure?
That first figure that I put out was Kabuki Man.
Nice.
My one. I actually have one here. This is one of my original three I made. I actually just bought this back from the Behind the Bootlegs guys.
You bought it back?
I bought it back on eBay. They were moving it on eBay. I was like, I got to have that back.
Yeah.
I only made three of them. There's four behind the bootleg show, which I actually got to give big credit to those guys because they gave me the platform to actually they put on this show. It was an open invite show, and I kind of just pulled the ripcord. You know, it was like one of those like, fuck it, I just got to do it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just gonna do it. And I, you know, I almost talked myself out of it 100 times over before the actual show happened. And I'm so glad I actually did go through with it because it really did kind of give me the confidence to keep going because I had for like the 2 years prior, I'd make a mold here and there, you know, an arm or a leg or a body. I had actually started on my Judge Dredd figure before Kabuki Man, but kind of like, you know, it's like, oh, I got three parts done. And then it's like, oh, it's like, it's getting too real. I'm scared, you know? And so the Kabuki Man figure I did, I didn't expect it to be as popular as it was. It seemed to do pretty well, especially on their show, you know, because they did the whole, they did like kind of a DKE Toys style where you send all the pieces into them and then they sold them through their web store, took a percentage. But, you know, I was just stoked that they all sold in like first over the weekend, you know, the show went on. I was blown away. You know, I sold three figures. I was like, like, oh man, I could really do something with it. Then did a second round of the Kabuki Man. And that's what got me the cease and desist from Troma.
You got a cease and desist on your first toy?
Yeah, exactly.
That's unreal.
From Troma, of all things, too.
Yeah, do you have it, like, framed somewhere?
No, so this is the downside, right? It was, so it's like a, it's a combo cease and desist / licensing deal. So what had happened was, I'd done this run of Kabuki Man's. Guys from the Troma fans are fervent. I didn't really realize this. They are like diehard, you know, Troma blooded fans. Like they will go to the ends of the earth. And a guy that was Lloyd Kaufman's like assistant in Texas saw the Kabuki Man and was like, yo, I need one of these. You know, like there was no Kabuki Man toys. He really wants one. And then he like kind of tells me about his thing with Lloyd Kaufman. And, you know, obviously you're hearing this and it's like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. You know, like, oh yeah, you know, Lloyd, like, you know, you figure he just like shook his hand a couple of times here and there, you know, I met him at a meet and greet. I know him.
But he
like,
knew no, Lloyd.
He actually like, he's the one who picks him up from the airport and drives him around. And so he gets one of these figures and shows it to Lloyd Kaufman, who's president of Troma. And Lloyd Kaufman apparently loves it. Like he's like really wants me to, he wants to make more. He wants to put him into production, you know, sad enough. It's a bootleg He-Man. And I'm like, I can't really, I don't know if that's necessarily licensable, but they, they approached me, sent me, it's all on Instagram. Unfortunately, I never got a real letter. I should have pushed it and got a legit C&D on Troma letterhead. Cause I would have that thing up. They reached out to me through their law team. So the law team wanted to sue me. Lloyd wanted me to make more. But they're like, basically, hey, we'll extend a licensing deal to you if you can make a significant amount. If not, you can't make these things anymore. But I think they thought I was making a lot more than, you know.
Yeah,
I never got down to what a significant amount meant to them, but I knew it was more than the.
I can tell you right now how much it is. It's a small run is still under like 1,000 and under is still technically a small run. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. 100%. Yeah. I figured at least 250, you know, like whatever it was, like I can't do that.
It's
me at a workbench in my side room. Like, no, I can't. You know?
Yeah.
Especially at that time, I hadn't even got my chops up. So even making those couple handfuls that I had took like a lot. It was like a really slow process for me to like do that, the painting, the building of everything. So it wasn't like I was in any position to do that. So obviously I had to pass on the licensing part of it. And, you know, technically I'm not allowed to sell these things anymore. I do have a plan to re-release a very similarly styled figure called Illegal Kabuki Dude. And it is happening. It is happening. I've been telling people it's happening.
Okay.
And
that's unreal. Most first figures of people that create, like, we can all agree that they're usually trash. Like, we just don't do well because we're still trying to learn how to do certain things. But for you to create something, it sells out, and also you're offered a licensing deal. That's wild. That's wild.
Yeah, a little unique. I mean, obviously, it was it's a little punk rock, too. You know, it's Trona, so they're only going to half-ass do things as well, because look at their movies. Love them to death, but, you know, like, they rely on that kind of DIY aesthetic. It was definitely surprising, you know, like when I first sent that, like I said, I almost talked myself out of joining that or just participating in that show so many times.
Yeah.
And didn't, I like every single time I was like, no, God, you know, I gotta do this. I gotta try to do this. And if I fail, I fail, but at least I can say I tried, you know? So I'd always get right back on the saddle and keep pushing ahead. And like, you know, one of those things where it's like right down to the wire, especially because I had to ship it in, working right down to the wire, shipping it at the very last moment, you know, trying to get the clear coat to dry real fast before you throw it in a box to ship off.
That
how well they did, and then how many times after that I got hit up for another one, you know. That's why I had to buy my original back, because I was never able to keep one. Mm-hmm. Every time I'd make an extra one, inevitably somebody would ask me for it. And then it's like, well, you know, somebody else money, really wants it. But not even just money. It's like somebody else really wants it. I'm from small town West Virginia. We're used to like, oh, here, you know, yeah, no, you just take it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, obviously making the money on it is great, too, but. You know, it's like somebody else wants it.
Yeah.
I can make another one, you know, like I got the molds, I can make another one. And then, you know, it gets to the point where I have to buy it back on eBay for $50.
Yeah. Which is crazy.
Yeah. More than I sold it for.
Yeah. How did that kind of set up your trajectory for toy making? I mean, it kind of sets everything in motion.
Right.
And so how did this kind of, I don't know, maybe align you for, because we're going to get to the point where you are now hosting shows. Your canon event is like, now you're one of the dual headed monster that's like doing shows like crazy. And so how did this set you up? What was the next thing that you were like, okay, now we're doing this.
Right. So, So like I said, that was a Behind the Bootleg show.
Yeah.
Yoli and Geezer. I got to give it up to them. They gave me and a lot of other artists are like kind of first chances to do something. So they really loved, that's why they kept one of the Kabuki Mans, because they loved it. So that's what the one I bought back. They just gave me a lot of praise for the figure. And then after that, I was kind of like on their train of shows. So the next one they did was a rock and roll show. And so I came up with the idea for Old Man Danzig. I don't know if you've seen the Danzig meme, where it's like old, tired,
like, oh, 50, yeah, yeah,
60-year-old Danzig carrying the kitty litter.
Yeah.
I did kind of a joke toy based off of that, called Old Man Danzig. Again, turned out to be quite a hit. It got real popular on Facebook Danzig memes.
We interrupted this broadcast of Toys on Tap to bring you this. Meanwhile, in a galaxy of bootleg treasures.
DOV2, we have engine failure. We must crash land on DKE Toy Planet. Oh my, we're doomed. Wait, salvation. Hooray, we're saved, DOV2. Limited edition custom artist made action figures and DKE toys.
Check out www.dketoys.com for a full catalog.
For custom action figures,
DKE.
Yeah,
pages. Like, there's everybody loves a good Danzig meme, and
don't we all?
Yeah, and that toy got like passed around quite a bit. Just the like pictures, photos, the post of it, and so that was surprising as well. Another one that sold out almost instantly. And then from like, that was like the one was like, okay, I think I could actually really do this, you know, mm-hmm. It wasn't just like a crazy fluke. And then did their superhero show, the Behind the Bootleg superhero show. Cause that was like, one of the things I love about a show, being an art school kid myself, like having a due date, having a like some like you know bumpers on the bowling lane, like okay,
yeah, give me those parameters. Are like
what's kind of the theme here, you know?
Yeah.
So I work really well with those kinds of outlines, you know. Left to my own devices, that's when I'm like I just kind of like, oh, what do I want to do? I'll do everything 75%, and then just kind of on to the next thing, you know. Mm-hmm. Whereas if I have a hot solid due date, I've got to get it done.
Yeah.
So I really like the toy show format. But yeah, then did the Old Man Danzig. Then they did a superhero show. And I wasn't really sure what to do, because one of the things I don't really like doing is doing like working on a character that's already been done. Or, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not really one of these like straight up bootleg guys. You know, I want to do something more original, something that doesn't already have. That's why I picked Kabuki Man over Toxic Avenger, which is also one of the things that blew me away about my C&D, was that there's a million Toxic Avenger bootlegs and versions out there. They don't go after those guys, but you do one Kabuki Man, oh, watch out.
Yeah.
But there's no Kabuki Man toys. And that's where I was like, ooh, that's a classic trauma, no toys. That's the one I went for. But that's so for their superhero show, I was like, I kind of was like, well, comic book, he's not a superhero, but he's a comic book character. So I finished up that Judge Dredd I had been working on. That was just kind of sitting there. You know, I had a shoulder pad. I had the shoulder pads done. I had the helmet like half done, and I had the body, and that's it. So I had to like recreate, you know, the arms, the legs, the whole thing. So I pushed myself to get that done. And that one went over pretty well as well. I did two full runs of that. I think I've sold about 20 of those Judge Dredds over the time. And it was all really, a lot of it was based off of my buddy had done a goofy little drawing of a Judge Dredd type character with a He-Man card, you know. It wasn't a real toy, but it was like, ooh, and that's like, oh dude, that's awesome, I'm doing that.
Yeah.
Did that one, and then started getting like, did a F is for Frankenstein show with Lab Monkey. And then Behind the Bootlegs was gonna do a G.I. Joe show, and first it was an erotic toy show, which I was like, I don't really do the
that's
erotic.
Tough. Yeah.
that's not my thing. I like raunchy, and some things not in toys. Like, I don't, it's not my thing. I don't like, you know, genitalia
and this is
on toys and things like that. And I'm like,
the cusp of you starting to run shows. This is where this is almost at.
It's making that transition right here, because they started off with the erotic show. Then they were like, okay, it's going to be an erotic show and a G.I. Joe show. I was like, okay, cool. I can do a G.I. Joe thing, no problem. So I did one up. Then come time for that show, you know, it's getting a couple weeks before the show, and I haven't heard anything about, you know, this G.I. Joe show. So I kind of like hit them up, and I was like, oh yeah, no, we decided to call the show off. And so I was like, oh shit, I got this. It was the Cobra Commander Skeletor mashup I did. Yeah. I got them done. And I was like, well, shoot. Like, do I just release this? Is kind of, then this is my first time like just doing a toy and releasing it without a show for it, you know. And I kind of planned on that, but then I like reached out to some of the other guys that were doing the Behind the Bootleg shows, and the only other person that was really kind of thinking about doing the G.I. Joe show that maybe had something was Bootleg Austin, Cave Dweller Toys, you know. So he was like, you know what, maybe we should just do our own G.I. Joe show. And, you know, and he was better friends with the Behind the Bootlegs guys. And I'm like, well, like, you should check with them. Well, I don't want to step on any toes. I don't want them to think that we're like co-opting anything of theirs, or, you know what I mean? And he hit them up, they were fully on board. They gave us their blessing. And so then we're like, screw it, let's do this G.I. Joe show thing.
This is at the cusp too. They're slowly pulling back at this point, yes. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was the point where they're like, no more shows. And yeah. Really kind of started laying off doing a lot of the voice
yeah. Show. So when you guys took it on, I mean, I just remember, well, the cool part about running the podcast is that like few things happen in the toy community, like especially the resin where I haven't heard about, someone hasn't reached out about something.
Right.
Or I haven't seen a flyer or something. And then I saw the GI show pop up and it was like, this is like, I know nothing about G.I. Joe. I grew up with the worst side of G.I. Joe, the extreme, right, yeah. They sucked. And so G.I. Joe had turned me off completely. But then to see that there was a whole show coming about like some kind of custom version right. of G.I. Joe's, I was immediately, okay, let's watch. Let's see what's happening. And so tell me, I mean, you hadn't run a show yet at this point.
No, hadn't run a show yet, but had spent a good amount of time getting to know Lab Monkey Number 9.
Right, who and, is a king at running shows. Knows yeah, what's yeah, to, def- yeah.
Yeah, definitely really leaned on him for some like inspiration and like, here's what we should be kind of trying to do. Here's the, you know, because I had, obviously like all of us, like Apocalypto came around. I wasn't involved in the first one. And that was like,
oh, yeah, yeah.
I want to be in this show so bad. Oh, this is so amazing. Apocalyptico yeah. is like such a great concept for a show. And that's why when he asked me to be in the Frankenstein one, which was his first of the alphabet, I was like super stoked. Didn't know what I was going to do for it, you know, but I was like instantly like, yes. But then through that process, got to know him more, really like bent his ear about how he kind of put stuff together. And took a lot of advice from him and structured our show. We moved the date back. Originally, the G.I. Joe show that Behind the Bootlegs was going to throw was going to be in like January. And this was like towards the end of December. It was literally like 2 or 3 weeks before the show was going to go on. I'm like, well, this is, if we're going to take it over and kind of drum it back up, because there's literally, I think it was me, Austin, and maybe one other person had something that they were kind of, you know, like it was like maybe yeah. maybe not, you know,
that's
like
a solid show, three people
concept. Yeah, yeah. And so it's like okay, and so then we were like, well, push it back, you know, push it back to like towards the end of March, and then just started kind of promoting it, you know. Mm-hmm. So on these shows, me and Austin have found our like grooves. He's mostly the face, you know. Mm-hmm. I don't know why I put he's the face. He's one of the worst representatives ever. Love yeah. the guy. But he's mostly like the face, or you know, I'll let him do all the like asking the big names if they want to be involved. You know, he's he's the one who got like Jebaho and Frankenlander and Rainbow Yawn and like all these people that were like, whoa, big time guys for us to get involved in our especially our first show. Mm-hmm. But I handle a lot of the back end stuff. So all the logo design, flyer design, a lot of the like logistics of like keeping straight who all's in the show, especially the first one, because we were just totally shooting from the hip. So he's getting names, I'm getting names. We're like forgetting to tell each other, like, oh yeah, this guy said he wanted in, this person said they wanted in. So the first one is a little messier just because of that.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, we forgot this person. Oh, you know, you have to update the flyer like 20 times. We started doing the promo on it. I think we got 50, 60 people.
Which that is first one. Insane.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, having open enrollment is a big one. You know, you'll get a lot of like newer people that same thing. Like that was one of the things that I was like, no, I want to make sure that we're opening up to everybody, because that was one of the things that really helped me out was getting in an open enrollment and like being like pushing myself to do the show when I hadn't done anything. And then like through that, getting a broader audience and the confidence, like, yes, I can actually make these figures and I can post it up and people mm-hmm. be interested in it. And so we kept it open enrollment. Yeah, had, I think it was about 60 people that first one. And I thought it was amazing, you know, mm-hmm. like just getting like big name guys, little guy, you know, we had, I think we're pretty well split between like established artists and people who it was their first time doing anything.
Yeah.
And now like a lot of those first timers are kind of our role dogs. They're like, yeah, when's the next one? You know, they're the ones that are almost pushing us to like you should do another show. If it was up to some of these guys, we'd be doing a show every other week. It seems
yeah.
like, oh, let's do this. Had a great show, you know. There was a little drama around it, but
yeah,
you know, that makes it legendary too.
Yeah. the crazy thing is, like, I've talked about this artist.
Right.
There are some moments of drama that happen in the toy scene. It is what it is. Right. But it's interesting to see how quickly those things fade. Or how quickly right. they just like, we move on. It doesn't right. matter. Let's just right. keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. The brotherhood of resin and plastic, you know, it's hard to,
yeah,
it's hard to, you know, drive a wedge too far into that. So,
right.
Yeah. Most of us can get over things. And like that all being said, a great turnout to a point where when we did the second one, mm-hmm. we got pretty much everybody coming back, yeah. you know, that was a part of it. Almost everybody rejoined and then some, you know.
And you, I think what was interesting about you and Cave Dweller when you did it is online shows were not, I mean, COVID kind of brought about the yeah. online show thing, which in the beginning it was like, man, I don't even know how I feel because I don't know how I fit into that.
Right.
But you guys took a new thing where it was not only am I going to have 60 artists on, but we're going to do lives and we're going to sit right. there and really go through each piece. Y'all are troopers. I would have gone through like 10 and said, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so I, like, you guys not only had promised like, yeah, we want you to be a part of the show and we want to show it off and do that. But as a part of that fulfillment, you're like, we're going to do a live and really talk about every piece.
Right.
Holy.
Yeah. God. As much as we can, obviously, within constraint, because if you don't, then the live turns into like a 4.5 hour ordeal. I yeah. mean, we're talking about 60, 70 artists. So, you know, you start quantifying that 60 artists. If we spend 2 minutes per artist, that's including the, you know, the dumb banter that we also have,
yeah.
you know, just, you know, Cave Dweller's very tangential.
He's been on here. He's, I know. Yeah, yeah.
Next thing you know, he's, you know, he's bringing up some obscure 90s action movie. Like,
yeah. And so yeah. this sparked something in you because, like, drama or not, it was successful. And you yeah. guys did something that hadn't really been done and or hadn't been done on this kind of a scale. Because 60 people's a lot. And so
yeah, it's a good amount. It's a good amount. It's a lot to keep track of, yeah, for sure.
Then the conversation starts, and it started, I'm assuming, between you two of like, all right, next show, what is it?
Right. Yeah, I mean, really, so you know, we did the G.I. Joe show, and it was really more the participants. Obviously, you know, we had a great time doing it, putting the show together and everything, but then the people that were involved that are like so adamant about when's the next one.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I guess we got to do a next one, you know, yeah. like, oh shit, you know, I guess we're going to have to do it because the people want it so much. Like it's, yeah. it'd be disappointing to not. So yeah, we planned the next GI show. We didn't necessarily set a date, but we knew it was going to be, you know, we, that was our longest gap. We did a whole year. We didn't do any other shows. And then that was, yeah, G.I. Joe 2 was 2020 this year. But then, of course, this past year has been wild with the amount of toy shows that have been going on. Yeah. There's been like, you know, we did ours in March of 20, the first one in March 2023. March 2024 was already kind of claimed by Dimension X with the Sewer Showdown. So we had to move our, we moved ours back to May, because then also Ocularambus had claimed Robot Resurrection around during Easter. Mm-hmm. So, and then we have Apocalyptico in February. Assembly Required, which wasn't necessarily like a competitive show, but I just knew a lot of people were going to be working on stuff to get ready for Assembly Required. Mm-hmm. They're doing a show, you know, closer to that. You start running into, you know, I'm trying to be as kind with artists' time as possible, not just try and smash a bunch of events right on top of one another. Yeah. Just because we moved back to May, and then before GI Show 2024 could go off, old April Fool's rolls around. And through the GI Show thing, me and Austin had started this Shrek inside joke.
Yeah.
Like, I've never seen Shrek before, you know, like I don't really care, far beyond my my generation. And so he would get this like Shrek inside joke going. And of course, on New Year's Eve, he posts up something about how we're putting together this Shrek show.
Unreal.
You know? Yeah. Hilarious joke. I, of course, knew it was a joke. A lot of people didn't. And a lot of people were kind of bummed out to find out that it was a joke. Mm-hmm. So once again, it was like, well, I guess we got to do this.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe the response we're getting right now. No negative.
Yeah.
Like, everybody was like, dude, I'm so in. And it was like, huh, you're in? Like, you asked me to be a part of this? So, yeah, so that's where then Shrek Show was spawned out of. We all know the story, but that's really, it was, once again, the people wanted it. So I was like, well, I guess we got to do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's up to us. We got to be the bearers of the flames on these, you know?
Yeah. And it's crazy to think that, so you did shows, and then the Shrek show was the most recent one, and you've got one coming up. I just remember, because Shrek show was it last month, 2 months ago,
the last month, November last 21st. Month. So,
I get on Instagram, and it's like, you see, or I get a notification. It's like, you guys are going live. I was like, uh-huh. Oh, great. Click on it, and it's just Cave Dweller's face in like full green and ears. And I, if anyone would have seen my phone, it would have been so hard to explain.
Right.
Yeah. So it was just a good thing that I was like, awesome, we're going to watch this happen.
Like, whoa.
Yeah. And I mean, because the shows are so long, I can tune in for like a good portion of it, but it was just such a funny thing. And then to see the people that you guys have cultivated come out with such fire for such a weird show was insane.
Yeah, that was the most surprising to me. Obviously, you know, you do these shows, you encourage everybody to keep your stuff secret.
Yeah.
I don't even want to see. If you really, really, really need to like check in with me to like say, like, hey, how's this look? I'll totally give you feedback, but try not to as much as possible, because I get just as much happiness out of being surprised on the live. Like, oh my God. Because it's so much more fun. You know, I think that was the big thing with Shrek Show, is that it was just so fun. Once again, Austin in the full face paint, Matt, you know, it like, he's the guy that we put in as the major representative here.
Yeah. Do you find that you are, I mean, you started out in a whole different area and then moved to toy making and then now toy show hosting. Do you find that you are starting to leave toy making behind a little bit because you're running these shows with Cave Dweller?
Trying not to. Okay. I know I've been sparse with the things I've released. I'm still participating in a lot of shows.
Yeah. It's hard to do both.
It is hard to do both, but also I've also been moving. I've moved several times in the past year. moved across country from Las Vegas. I was living in Las Vegas, moved all the way across country to back home to West Virginia. And then I moved into a new place here in West Virginia. And at first it was upstairs apartment of a house. Then just recently I moved into the bottom of the house and took over the whole house. So I've actually had to move my studio now 3 times in the last year, which I don't know if you've ever done anything like that, but you want us to talk about throwing a monkey wrench in any plans.
Yeah.
Like that is like, oh, I got to pack up all my things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like bring them and put them back out and then figure out where all the things I just packed up are.
Yeah.
Like, oh boy, I'm only halfway unpacked here, but I am at least mostly full functional. But yeah, I mean, I have several things planned. It is just getting the time to do them. And now that I'm getting more settled here, I definitely have more time. I've almost been doing, that's why a lot of the figures that I have done for the most recent shows, like See Us for Creature, the wrestling show, WTF, even like Shrek show, my GI show piece from this last year, my sewer showdown piece, they've all been one-offs just because I don't really have the time to make a whole run of them.
Yeah.
So a lot of these figures, I haven't even tried to sell them because it's like, well, this is the one I made. I kind of feel like I want to keep it.
Yeah.
So like some of these, like my See Us for Creature figure, I need molds of like some of it. Like just get it done, do this. It's just like, you know, having the time and where I was at before, I didn't have a lot of space. Now I have a whole room that's studio here, which is nice.
Yeah.
So I can set up my 3D printer and my paint booth and my, you know, vacuum former. Yeah.
I mean, so now that you have all like more time, you settled, I mean, you now have, it's like a formulaic thing with shows and stuff. With all that kind of being set in place, what's next for you, I guess, just you as a toy maker?
Yeah. So obviously I got some things I've been working on. I haven't really announced this, but I'll show you.
Are we announcing it here?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, we are.
I mean, there's a lot of work to do. So take my announcement with a grain of salt, you know?
Yeah.
I started getting into 3D sculpting, 3D printing. Not to say that that's all I want to do, but it definitely something I want to conquer.
Yeah.
Something I'm going to try and get a good footing of that I can use that as another weapon in my arsenal. That's what
absolutely.
I like. I don't like to be like, oh, I only do it this way. I do it. That's also why I haven't stuck with just Motu figures. You know, I've been doing like some of these types of guys that are, you know, in this kind of... this is almost in like the X-Men, 90s X-Men toys.
Toy biz, scale. Yeah.
Yeah, the toy biz scale, you know. I've got several of those figures. That was Computor, Sky Quasar here.
Yeah.
I have a Mr. Sly. This is the main bad guy in our movies. This is my Mr. Sly.
He's too good.
But
is it just a bag over his head? What is that on his head?
It's a goofy helmet. If you saw the character, we made this basically the guy that played Mr. Sly moved away and we had to have another one of our buddies play Mr. Sly.
Yeah.
And the way we dealt with that was like, oh, he's going to wear a gigantic kind of Darth Vader type mask. But like, let's make the worst Darth Vader mask we could make.
Yeah.
And so we just cut it out of foam core. And so then that's been his look ever since. He's got his power glove. You know, he wore a power glove all the time.
He's good.
But the latest that I've been working on, these are all 3D sculpted and printed. I'm doing I want to do a run of these. I call them Fallen Food Fighters.
Oh. So
this is a Choco Taco.
He's great. The fact that you said you're just starting sculpting?
I've been working at the 3D for about a year now. I've been doing the 3D.
It looks great. Thing. It looks like it fits in that arena.
Yeah. So then they come with a little backpack.
Awesome.
And then they have they have arms. They have arms that do. Get a little gun.
I mean, it's called Fallen. So does this mean like
Fallen Food Fighters? The idea
they've been canceled, like, right?
Yes. So yeah. Taco Tacos. I got Jello Pudding Pops.
Get the heck out of here. His body is fantastic. Is that a helmet on the top left?
Yeah, a little helmet on the top, because all of them have a little helmet.
Fantastic.
Did the Flintstones Push Pops.
God dang it.
Surge Soda. These are ones, I don't have those ones printed, but I have them 3D modeled already. Surge Soda, Lifesavers Cream Savers. I want to do some Dunkaroos or Shark Bites. You know, the whole idea is like, oh, these fallen food fighters. So,
yeah,
you know, it's, I think they all have ridiculous names. I think this is Master Sergeant Choco Taco. This
so good.
Private First Class Pudding Pop, you know?
God, that's so
that's
good.
Like, that's my next thing that I've been kind of working on.
Yeah.
And like I said, just kind of getting into more 3D sculpting stuff, but obviously not leaving any of the kind of half kit bash, half original sculpt stuff that I have been doing. Because that's fun. I love doing that too. And it's, you know, you get results in a different manner. You know, the 3D sculpting is nice because I can be a little bit more controlled with it. But then there is problems just like trying to learn the programs. Luckily, I was able to finally pick up an iPad with Nomad Sculpt, because I've tried using the other ones like Blender and these other more advanced 3D sculpting programs. But I can't wrap my head around it. Like the stylus on iPad, I can get using a mouse trying to manipulate. It just does not work for me.
Yeah.
maybe if I really stuck with it, I could teach myself. But you know, I like my results a little faster. So
yeah, that's cool. But, that's a cool project to be working on. I think what it Janky once came on and he said he likes creating toys that are like 2 degrees off normal or something's wrong. Like, and I think when I look at these toys, have you ever seen, this is crazy, this is going to tell you what my TikTok algorithm is like. Sometimes I get videos of people trying to join the military in India, and they put them up to this bar, and if you're not a certain height, you don't make it. Like, they're like, no, you can't join the military. And so it's like, when I see these like discontinued food items, it's like, oh, you were so close to making it into the regular army. You're the reject. I'm sorry.
Right. The extra special forces.
Yeah. And so I'm all about that style of toy. And I think they fit so well in the grand scheme of things and can be produced without ever being worried like that you're going to get another CMD.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, honestly, at a certain point at our levels, you know, I'm not a major star in the toy world like that to like,
yeah,
I doubt I would ever get another C&D. It just happened to be the luck of the draw on that Kabuki man. Just like, you know, it's like the perfect storm of like, oh, these guys saw it. That was so cool. You know, I got a picture at dinner one day of Lloyd Kaufman holding my toy up. It's like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah,
like,
that is cool.
He really did know Lloyd.
So tell me about this. You have another show coming up pretty quickly. It like when we first started hearing about it, it was far away, but now we're like approaching it. Yeah, tell me about the show.
We slammed in there just because people were wanting to do another show. One Up, it's a video game themed show, we kind of say classic video games, but that's open to interpretation. One of the things we kind of came up with this idea as a group in, I think it's the Robot Resurrection chat. One of these chat groups, we had people throwing around ideas that somebody came up with a video game show, a classic video game show.
Yeah.
And so me and Cave Dweller were like, oh, we'll take the reins on that one. But then, you know, it's like, oh, do we do only 8-bit? Do we do, you know, only Nintendo, da, 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 da. And then, like a kid like Cool Cat was like, oh, I can't, I totally want in on this. I want to do one of my favorites from Fallout, you know? Yeah. He's like, well, we can't go and like limit it to only this era, because then we start nudging out people, or like, oh, they don't really, you know what I mean? Like, some people like Super Nintendo more than they like Nintendo. So it was like, what is classic to you? Because really at this point, even Minecraft is what, like 15 years old or something like that. Like, that's been around for a while. People have grown up on that too. So it says classic. It's really whatever video game thing. It's kind of a little bit more open-ended. Obviously, Shrek Show has got a lot of Shreks. Got some other side characters, got a lot of Shreks. This one is going to be a little bit more wide open because it's endless what all you're going to do.
Yeah.
And once again, open call. Still have the enrollment open. Actually, just had somebody enroll today. So I think it's an easy one for most people to get it, you know, find something they want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people join Shrek's show just for the hilarity of it without, you know, talking to people going into it. Cause we did promote it for so long.
Yeah.
You know, people knew about it. We came up with it, you know, we announced it early summer, I think, even before then in May, I believe, by the time we were like, nah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of buildup to it. And for the most part, that whole entire time, a lot of people were like, I have no idea what I'm doing for this.
Yeah.
I have no clue. What am I going to do with Shrek? And you couldn't tell because everybody had killer ideas.
Yeah.
So with the video game show, obviously, 1UP, it's I think it's going to be a lot easier for people to find something. But maybe that makes it a little bit more difficult because same thing. I don't know. I have several different ideas and it's like, do I go with some, it's hard to one. I don't have necessarily a favorite of all time video game. Mm-hmm. I love so many. So it's like, ooh, what characters do I pull? I was thinking of doing something really, really esoteric, like Opa Opa from the old Sega Master System games. But is that too, like, who knows that? How many people know that character or that game? Because it's not very many. So what do I do? So that's one that's, I think that's going to be even harder. I had a hard time figuring out what I was going to do for Shrek Show. So at a certain point, I might even just start throwing the shows and not doing figures for them. Because I'm always like, anymore, it's been like, oh, like hurry up and crush it out towards the end. Get it done. Because I'm doing all this other stuff. So it might be nice to just throw the show and
I mean with all this stuff coming on and all this, you guys are the most busy. So these shows are, I think people forget how much really goes into a show, how much really, like, I don't know, like keeping track of everything in and of itself is a task. And so like when you're in the midst of it with 60 people, like that's crazy. So I think I can say for everyone, like we're pumped to see what's coming for 1UP.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I'm excited for it too. I think at this point we're looking at like 63 applicants.
Holy right now. Hell.
And like I said, it's still open. So if anybody wants to join, you just holler at me or Cave Dweller, we can give you the link. That's one thing that we have started doing is, I use a Google Sheets link to just collect everybody's data.
Exactly.
It's, you pop it into Excel form, so much easier than trying to keep track of everything and direct message everybody individually and compile all that information. So that's one thing that really helps. It's funny doing the show, like you come up with the idea. Okay, cool. I usually get to work on a little pre-flyer, pow. And then it's like, okay, we can kind of coast for a little while. But then as the days get closer and it's like, oh no, we got to do all this stuff. And it's like, and then it's like this fever pitch all the way up until the very end, like the last month of it is like, oh, we got to get all this done. Answer questions, you know, make sure everybody knows. One thing that is nice now is we have enough people that have done these types of shows that most people kind of go into it knowing how to do, like how those shows going to run, you know,
knowing
that, like, okay, you know, maybe a day or two before we start the chat group, flyer will come out a week or two before. I like to try and get mine out a little sooner.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that I really loved about Shrek Show was how much, like, we had a group of artists in that show that like just took the promo by the horns.
Mm-hmm.
Like I mean, we had certain guys like Yuckamuck, Jimmy Folklore, LRH Bootlegs. They were posting about this like almost daily, mm-hmm. being like, Shrek, you know, like all the most, and of course, obviously you have tons of just ridiculous Shrek content out there. So there was no problem like finding new things, tagging us in just the most ridiculous Shrek things as possible. But the like excitement from the participants, it was fantastic. And getting, you know, they wanted, the more of that that went on, the more excited everybody got, to where it was like, oh, holy shit, people are like really looking forward to the Shrek show. You know, like the day of the show, people are like, let's go.
Which is awesome.
Yes.
That is, you guys got so much going on. And it, you know, Kajiki, it's been awesome having you on.
Thanks, bud.
To bring all this stuff to light. I mean, you've told us a lot about what's coming and the stuff there. Yeah. But the last part is really just promotion of self. And so what, like, you get the last bit to promote everything you've got coming up yourself as an artist, shows, all kinds of stuff. So take it away. Promote. How do people get to you? Get in the show, all that stuff.
Obviously, Instagram, Kajiki Toys. I also have a website, KajikiToys.com. That sells, I actually have some, I have a few figures on there, not too much in the shop right now. But I have some, I've been doing t-shirt designs too. So I got some t-shirt designs up there. Would love to see anybody rocking those.
Yeah.
And one up coming up January 16th, I think is when it is.
We'll fact check in the bio. Yeah.
And then look for another GI show this year. I think this is going to be the last GI show.
Okay.
I think that's one of the things that we've been kind of playing around with, is like maybe not doing as many like repeat shows, kind of maybe new themes for each show. Another Shrek show is still up in the air, but this last one was so good. It's almost like, do we want to do it again, or do we just let it live on as the Shrek show that happened?
Yeah.
But for myself personally, I've look for these at some point. Fallen Food Fighters at some point. Another run of Illegal Kabuki Dudes will be coming out. I think I'm going to be working on something with Future Retroistic as well. On a, maybe some giveaways there. I'll be at Assembly Required this year. I'll be sharing a booth with Grayskull Toys, so that's going to be fun.
Heck yeah.
If anybody's coming out, I don't know, are you planning on coming out, or?
I'm trying to get out of a work thing to make sure that I'm there. Because if I can get out of a work thing, then I'll partner with Pocket Salsa.
Oh, nice. Cool. Very cool. Yeah. I've shared a booth with Pocket Salsa last year. I tell you, that toy show is amazing, especially as toy makers. It's a great toy maker vacation. It was amazing getting to like hang out with all these guys, meet them in person. You know, we're all like friends on online, but actually getting to like shake hands with somebody and you know, have a drink, or, you know, just actually kick it with somebody for a while is a whole different thing. So that's the main thing I'm going back for. That to me was far more important than anything else at that show. So definitely looking forward to running back into some of the people I met, meeting new people, because it sounds like this year, one, it's going to be bigger, and two, there's going to be a lot more of us there. So that's really exciting. And other than that, I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants. I don't have a whole lot of plans. I take it as I come. You know, I also still participate in other shows. I'll be obviously doing Apocalyptico, and then whatever else pops up, probably do Robot Resurrection as well. But
heck yeah,
see what happens, you know.
Dude, Kajiki, sometimes
these shows that they're a little too fast paced, it's like I can't even get anything done. But now that I am getting more settled in my space here, like I said, I've only had this set up maybe 2 weeks. This is where I finished off my Shrek piece, so. As I get more set up here, I'll be definitely getting back into moving more stuff around and making it happen more, which is, I'm really looking forward to that, because I definitely felt a little cramped and a little stagnant this past year with everything else that's been going on. But
dude,
big stuff.
Heck yeah, glad you're back at it. But yeah, thank you so much for coming on Toys on Tap.
Yeah, no worries, man. Thanks for having me. Hopefully I see you at Simply Record.
Heck yeah.